So we have been looking together at the life of Joseph. Joseph with the coat and the brothers and the dreams. We are looking and asking ourselves, what can we learn from his life? We've been looking at how he lived his life with God and how his story might help us with the pitfalls we face in our everyday lives. Last time we met in the morning, we learnt that he'd been accused of an assault with Potiphar's wife, an assault that he did not do, and now he is in prison. That's where we ended in Genesis chapter 39. He's there not because he did something wrong, he's there because he did something right, which is an assault to our sense of fairness. And we also spent some time thinking about the character and the integrity of the life of Joseph and asked ourselves some hard questions about our character and our integrity. So the last verse of Genesis chapter 39 reminds us that this integrity in the life of Joseph continues, but so does God's faithfulness. The warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. That's where we left him last time. And we're going on into chapter 40 today, if you'd like to find chapter 40 in your Bibles or on your phones. And in chapter 40, we are thinking about Joseph waiting today. He hasn't got much option other than to do that. He is in prison and he is stuck. Now, probably most people in this room know the ending to the story of Joseph. We know that it ends okay. And so it's easy to read our passage today in the light of knowing how it turns out at the end. All things work out well. God turns everything around for good. Yay! But Joseph doesn't know that at this point. He doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. He may be great with dreams, but he is a dreamer with dashed dreams at the moment, not knowing if his dreams will ever come to fruition. So as we hear chapter 40, listen to it in that light, how Joseph would have lived it at this time. So we're reading from Genesis chapter 40, verse 1. And the words will appear if I click them by magic on the screen. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. After they'd been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in his master's house, "Why do you look so sad today?" "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said to him, "In my dream, I saw a vine in front of me, and the vine was three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and put the cup in his hand. "This is what it means," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to the position. And you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I've done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." When the chief baker saw that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, "I too had a dream. On my head were 3 baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." "This is what it means," Joseph said. "The 3 baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and impale your body on a pole, and the birds will eat away your flesh." Nice. Now, the 3rd day was Pharaoh's birthday, and he gave a feast for all his officials. He lifted up the heads of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker in the presence of his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he impaled the chief baker, just as Joseph had said to them in his interpretation. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. And from the next chapter, when 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. Joseph is waiting. Now, I don't know about you, but I am rubbish at waiting for the things that really matter. You know, we can wait for a bus, we can wait for a train, but waiting for the things that really matter are hard. Waiting for answers, waiting for the right time, waiting for prayers to be heard and answered. That's harder. I think most of life is waiting for something or other. And Joseph is waiting. He'd been 17 when he came to Egypt, and he's 30 when he's released from prison. So he spent about 13 years both working for Potiphar and in prison. Now, we don't know really how long he's doing each bit, but in the beginning of chapter 41, as we've heard, we know that at this point he has to wait another 2 years until Pharaoh interprets the dream. Life is often about waiting and our response to waiting. Here's Framley Franklin. We enjoy going to the basketball. Ooh, bet you didn't know that. The basketball is at Cheshire Oaks. We recommend it. Unfortunately, it's a Sunday night, so that's why we don't go very often. We only go when we don't have a Sunday night. Here we are at the basketball. Anybody know the rules of basketball? They are complicated. I won't explain them to you because I don't have a clue. It's very fast-paced. It stops and starts all the time. There are 4 quarters of 10 minutes each, but the whole game lasts way longer than 40 minutes because it stops. It stops all the time. It stops for fouls. It stops for replays, it stops for people to come on and wave pom-poms, it stops for them to clean the blood off the pitch. That took a long time last time. It was very exciting. And there's relatively little time actually playing basketball. The rest of it is stopping time. And in the middle of the basketball, I thought, well, this is an illustration I could use at some point. And here we are. It's an illustration of life. Sometimes life happens in the stopping time. The action of life is small, but the waiting of life is large. I read this about Joseph's story this week. I'll read it to you. God permitted Joseph to be treated unjustly and put in prison to help build his character and prepare him for the tasks that lay ahead. The prison would be a school where Joseph would learn to wait on the Lord. He would learn that God's delays are not God's denials. That struck me. God's delays are not God's denials. I think sometimes we need to have that imprinted on our hearts. So what lessons can we learn about Joseph's time in prison to help us in times when we are waiting? Well, the first one is this. Whilst he was waiting, he was faithful. At the beginning of our chapter, when the cupbearer and the baker arrive, we don't know how long at this point Joseph has been in prison. But it must have been a while because he's earned the trust of the guards and he was put in charge over them. So he may have a position of responsibility, but he's still a prisoner. And this is just another day. We know that the cupbearer will be Joseph's pass out of jail free card, but Joseph doesn't know that. He had no way to know that at the time that it would be 2 more years until he's out of prison. He was just doing what he was asked to do, looking after those in his care. It was just a normal another day. Last week we spoke about his integrity and character. And we get the sense that this continues even when he is in prison. He's looking after the other prisoners. He's checking in on their mental health. He's interpreting their dreams. He is being faithful even in the waiting and the hard time. Somewhere I read this quote, "The secret of your future is found in your daily routine." What do you think to that? The secret of your future is found in your daily routine. I think that's interesting. The things that you do every day, especially the little things that make up the routine of your life, are the things that essentially show your faithfulness. And I think there's an element of that that's true. Because remember, Jesus said that the one who can be trusted with little things can also be trusted with more, he says in Luke chapter 16. So I wonder what little things that you are faithful in your everyday whilst you wait in the midst of the hard. God was with Joseph, and he's given the task of looking after the other prisoners. He doesn't know that by being faithful and looking after them, he will be advancing the cause for his own freedom. He doesn't know that. He's just being a man of integrity and being faithful. But God does know that. So a question for us all. You don't need to shout out the answer. It's a ponder deep within your soul. Are we faithful even when life seems to make no sense? Joseph is stuck in a hard place and he's still being faithful. are you in the hard places? The second lesson. Whilst he was waiting, he was ready. We heard this. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in his master's house, "Why do you look so sad today?" "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." As we know, Joseph's story is full of dreams. Dreams that his brothers didn't particularly like. These dreams, and we know that he will continue to go on and interpret the dreams of Pharaoh. In each case, dreams are crucial in the life of Joseph. He doesn't give up on using his gift. He doesn't give up on interpreting dreams, even though that's caused him grief in the past. It didn't go down well with his brothers. He could have given up on what God had given him. He could have given up because of the hassle that had caused him. "Well, I used to do that, but it used to get me into trouble, so I won't bother anymore." He could have given up, but he doesn't. Nor does he take the opportunity to brag and go, "Well, I'm a bit of a whiz kid with dreams, actually. You give me a dream, I'll tell you what it means. I'm really good at dreams, I am. Just test me." No, he doesn't do any of that. What he does do is he points directly straight away to the one who gives the answers to dreams. He points them to God. Do not interpretations belong to God? Even in prison, he knew that there was a big God who could help these men. He knew that there was a God who could give answers. And he's ready and waiting. He's like a prophetic coiled spring, ready to hear from God. That impresses me, because I know from experience in my life that in hard times, I sometimes curl up like a hedgehog and roll away from God. I'm not a prophetic coiled spring in hard times. And I think pain and frustration and disappointment have got the ability to do that, haven't they? To turn us away rather than towards God. He could have closed himself off from God. You know, "Where are you, God?" questions. "Why am I here? I've done nothing wrong." But he doesn't do that. He has a posture that is open and ready to hear from God, even if it's in a place where he does not want to be. He sees God's hand everywhere. Some of us are in places we don't want to be, living in seasons that are hard. Perhaps some of us are in jobs that we really, really don't like, with bosses that we really can't stand. Some of you are smiling, so I'll talk to those ones who are nodding at me later. Some of us are going through really tough times with friends or with relationships or with illness. Or maybe you're just not where you want to be in life right now. I wonder, in those places, are you ready, like Joseph was, to serve God right now, even if you'd rather be somewhere else? That's a hard question, isn't it? So our final lesson from Joseph's life this morning. Whilst he was waiting, he was bold. Joseph tells the cupbearer that he will be released in 3 days and all will be well. Yippee! But then he's bold enough to ask this. "But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. Yes, he's faithful. Yes, he's ready to serve God wherever he is, but he doesn't want to stop in prison. And you can't blame him. Who would want to? He wants to be elsewhere. My favourite film is The Shawshank Redemption. It is also set in prison. And like Joseph, the key character has done no wrong and is also falsely accused. In this moment of the film, he is talking with his friend Red, Morgan Freeman. We love Morgan Freeman. He's talking about, with his friend Red, about the hope that he still has. And Red replies that, you know, you can't have hope here, sort of thing. You know, you've got to give up on that. And Andy pauses and says this. Comes down to a simple choice. Get busy living or get busy dying. Get busy living or get busy dying. So many people lose hope. Joseph hangs on in there whilst he was waiting, but gets busy living by asking to be remembered. He takes his shot at hope. So my final question is, how are you at hanging on to hope when life is hard and everything looks hopeless? Joseph has been faithful in the waiting. He is ready for God to use him, and he is bold in taking a chance with hope. What do? While you wait? And what can you learn from the life of Joseph? Em's going to come and share some of her story about what God has been doing in her waiting and her disappointment. Thank you, Em.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, I apologise that I'm reading this off my phone, but I only have 5 minutes, and this testimony is no joke about 7 hours, so I'm having to condense. So for those of you who don't really know me, I started dancing when I was 3 years old. I absolutely loved it. It was amazing. And then I was about 6 years old, according to my dad, when he was tucking me into bed, and I looked at him and said, "Dad, I'm going to be a professional dancer." And from that moment, I was absolutely invested in dance. I attended every dance lesson known to man. Any extra scheme I could audition for, I did. And any extra opportunity I could take, I did. I threw my absolute all into it. And by the time I was 11 years old, I knew specifically that I wanted to be a prima ballerina. So at 16 years old, I went off to study professional dance. It was 3 years full-time dance training, and by the end of it, you're a professional dancer. But in my first week of training, I had this pain in the joint of my big toe. Now, I know pain in the big toe sounds quite small, but when you think about how much you use your feet walking and then times that by about 100 for a dancer in kind of point shoes and tight shoes, you can see where the issues would start to come. So I went and had some scans, and without going into the complicated medical detail of it all that, to be honest, I don't completely understand, I ended up having to have an operation in the November of my first year. Now, although the operation went to plan, and I was able to dance a bit after this, the operation resulted in further complications and weakness in my foot. I had tendon issues, nerve damage, sprained ankles, And essentially, all this combined just meant that I was left with chronic foot pain. Being on point very quickly got taken off the table, which meant my dream of being a prima ballerina was no longer in sight. It just became clear that with what was required in the dance industry, I was not going to hit that standard. I was not able to get through one dance class without being in quite serious pain. So it was becoming clear that a long, lengthy career as a professional dancer was not going to happen. And I did ask my consultant this bluntly. And I'd have to say this was a bit of a godly moment. I'm quite a black and white person, and I needed the consultant to tell me what I already knew. And obviously, consultants try and be quite optimistic, but he looked at me and he just said, "Emma, it's unlikely that you'll ever dance pain-free again." I'm not going to cry. And that was the hardest thing I've ever heard from anyone. But this was all before my third year in college, which I decided to push myself through with regular physio and rehabilitation so I could get the piece of paper that said I was a professional dancer, which I got. I could not understand why God hadn't healed me. And you can believe that I had all the prayer ministry in the world, and I still do. Oh, gosh. Chucking my phone around now. But in my final year of college, God started to reveal parts of his plan. God showed me how he had been equipping me in other ways, like choreographing and creating and leading worship in church. And over time, it just clicked. I had been so focused on getting back to dancing that I'd missed all that God was faithfully doing in my life. I finally understood Mike Pilavachi's quote of, "God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called." That was what God had been doing. He had been equipping me for all that was to come and for the calling he was going to place on my life. So I left dance college in July, and I'm now doing a degree as a choreographer, which I just adore. And I also have the privilege of volunteering and developing the worship here at church. I do believe that God is calling me into ministry. How that looks, I'm not sure. But as Louise has rightly said to me, God wastes nothing. I believe that my love for worship and gifting in dance and choreography will all marry together to form something that clearly gives God the glory through what I do. And I cannot wait to see what God has in store for me. God's faithfulness, grace on the bad days, and steadfastness is so evident in all that I went through. I used to say that they were my worst 3 years. And yes, they were difficult, but actually through writing this testimony, I can see how God was building my character and equipping me for the future. It says in Romans 5, suffering produces endurance, endurance produces character, and character produces hope. So let this be an encouragement. Sometimes we don't always see or understand what's going on, but I promise you, he is right there with you. And he has a plan. Whether that's in the small or the big, the situation that's been going on for a day, a week, a month, a year, or decades, he sees you and he hasn't forgotten you. I will stand up here and say I'm still waiting to be healed. But I absolutely believe that I will be, but it will be in God's perfect timing. God is faithful, church. Trust that. He will show you how faithful he is, because that is the God that we serve. I'm going to invite Dave up to pray for our world.
Thank you.